We're talking about Alex Haley and the 30th anniversary celebration of Roots, the amazing book that he wrote back in 1974. And of course, Reader's Digest funded it. And this is a really big idea for us at the Digest. And Gary Sledge is joining our roundtable, including Donna Banks and Andy Simmons and myself. And Gary, you were his editor at the end of his life, and he wrote a number of stories that you edited. Tell me a little bit about Alex Haley, the man, and what kind of person he was to work with.
Well, Alex was a good walker and talker. He was an oral storyteller more than anything, I think. Perhaps it comes from that tradition that he talks about in the book Roots, the Giro, the oral storyteller and historians of tribes in Africa. He certainly continued that in this country. And I can remember walking and talking with him at a number of different locations, one here at the Digest when we walked up to the guest house after a lecture. And he would always move slow, talk slow, but he had this wonderful kind of honeyed slow voice that, rather than being a rhetorician, he just drew you in with simple stories. So we would stop along the path up to the guest house, and he would comment about the flowers or the birds. There's geese on the property, and he would talk about them. The other thing I realize now is he was walking slow because he had a heart problem. And going up that hill, he was sweating. And I think part of the stops were because he was in ill health, and it was just a few months later of the last occasion that he died.
You're going to hear some clips of Alex Haley throughout this podcast. He actually addressed the entire employee group at Reader's Digest in 1991 when he was a guest speaker at the Digest. And he talked about Roots, and he talked about what inspired him to write it. And Donna Banks, you edited a story recently, partly from his comments. Can you tell us a little bit about what that meant?
That story was called Aboard the African Star, and it was kind of the standout piece in that talk because he reveals very personal information. He was kind of stuck with the writing of Roots. He had taken Kunta Kinte to a point, and he couldn't get him across the Atlantic Ocean there. And he talked about his struggles as a man, as a professional. He was deep in debt. He owed everybody. He said he had lied so many times about why he hadn't made his deadlines. And he was in the Coast Guard for 20 years. And so I think he was always drawn to water. And when he needed to write, he would go on freight ships. Very few passengers, alone, late at night when he'd do his writing. And it was there that he was finally, he had kind of a cathartic moment, a turning point. And it was there that he used to go down into the hold of the ship at night, and he'd lie in his underwear on a plank of wood. And he just kind of totally got immersed into who Kunta Kinte was. He'd talk to him, and they'd have conversations. But it was there that he was finally able to break through and bring him across. He talked about, at one point, seriously thinking about just dropping in the ocean and ending all the problems, the debt, the missed deadlines. And all of his ancestors came back to him and said, don't do it. You've got work to do here.
Well, that was one of his lowest points, obviously. But the fact that he did go to Africa, the fact that he did this project at all, was the result of Reader's Digest in the first place, because Lila Acheson Wallace actually funded the project. And here to tell you how the Digest actually got involved with Haley's amazing work is Haley in his own words.
I remembered having met Mrs. Lila Acheson Wallace one time at a lawn party somewhere around here. And she had just been sort of passing, and I stuck out my hand and said that I was privileged to write sometimes for the Digest. And then she added, if I can ever be of help to you, let me know. And and I wrote a letter to her that I had something I would like to try. It was a story, history of my family, and going back into Africa. And she wrote a note to some editor here. They had decided they were going to help me, back me. So the Digest made a decision, and they gave me a monthly check. I remember particularly one thing. They gave me a little Reader's Digest assignment card. It was a white card, and it said something like, Alex Haley is working on a project of interest to the Reader's Digest. I was always flipping this card to show it to people. And one time, I remember so well, I was in Dakar, Senegal, trying to rent a car to go into Gambia, and they were giving me a hard time until the credit cards didn't seem to have fazed them. And of course, I couldn't speak French, which they were speaking. And I pulled out this digest card, and when they saw that insignia, boom, I had the car like that. There's no problem. It was beautiful.
Yeah. Gary, you probably know better than anyone else that Alex had a very unique way of writing. And how does he develop an intimate relationship with his characters and with the people he was writing about?
I think he lived with them, as Donna was saying earlier. His imagination was such that the people he was writing about were very vivid. They were visually drawn. And he lived with them and they lived with him, so that they were people that walked and talked with him, as I was saying. Some of the early stories that he did, both for the Digest and for Playboy and other magazines, were based on personalities and were interview stories. And he had a way, just by being there, that made you want to talk. And he could get all kinds of people to talk to him, whether it was Malcolm X or Miles Davis. He had a wonderful feeling, a sympathy for people who were striving. And so you get stories like that of Wilma Rudolph. One of the ways that I came into contact with him here, I think the reason that I was paired with Alex, is I had come from Revell Books. And we were, at the time I came to the Digest, negotiating a contract with Wilma Rudolph. So I knew some of the people that he had written about in a kind of intimate way, and I think we hit it off right away. When I went down to his farmhouse outside of Knoxville, it's in a little town called Norris, I think, near the Appalachian Museum, and he had a farmhouse called Annie, and we would sit in his study, and he would tell stories and bring these characters to life once again.
I think one of his other great gifts, not only was he a great storyteller, I think he was a great listener. And people understood. He seemed totally into whomever he was talking to at that point. And that's
right.
Great gift.
Yeah. He was a listener as well as mm-hmm. a talker.
Totally.
He could be with you and be silent. It was mm-hmm. interesting.
Well, yeah. You know, that's an interesting point. So let's listen to the clip. Let's listen to Alex discuss how he conversed with his characters.
I got on a ship called the Villanger, and I went from Long Beach, California, completely around South America and back to Long Beach. It was 91 days, and I had written from the birth of Kunta Kinte through his capture. And I had, in the course of this, that's where I got in the habit of talking to your character. I knew Kunta. I knew everything about Kunta. I knew what he was going to do, what he had done, everything. And so I would just talk to him. And I had become so attached to him that I knew now I had to put him in the slave ship and bring him across the ocean. That was the next part of the book. And I just really couldn't quite bring myself to write that. I was in San Francisco. I wrote about 40 pages and chunked it out. You know, writers know, and I know we've had this experience, well, you just know that ain't got it. That ain't what you wanted to say. And when you write well, it isn't a question so much of what you want to say, it's a question of feel. Does it feel like you wanted it to feel? The feel starts coming into something around about the fourth rewrite. And then I wrote twice more, about 40 pages, and threw it out. And I realized what my bother was I couldn't bring myself to feel I was up to writing about Kunta Kinte in that slave ship and me in a high-rise apartment. I had to get closer to Kunta. I had run out my money at the Digest, lying so many times about when I'd finished, so I couldn't ask for any more. I don't know where I got the money from. I went to Africa. Put out the word I wanted to get a ship coming from Africa to Florida, to the U.S. I just wanted to simulate crossing.
You know, he was an amazingly articulate man. For those of you who want to read the collected works of Alex Haley, we have a new book. It's called Alex Haley, The Man Who Traced America's Roots. And you can find it on our website, rd.com, and order it there. And with it is a wonderful 30-minute DVD. And you can check out a couple of chapters and listen to some of the DVD as well. So go to rd.com. Up next, our best age busters to help you live longer.
To celebrate the 30th anniversary of the award-winning novel and TV miniseries, Roots, and to help us understand the profound impact it had on all Americans, here's actress Halle Berry.
on my life personally, it was totally impactful because Black history wasn't something that we learned in school, and especially the school I was going to at the time when the series came out, and it was an education. It was an education that I think I was always longing for, but it wasn't being taught to me. It was my first introduction into my very own history. I remember a sense of pride after seeing the movie because now there was a knowing.